Okay, so good evening, everybody. Thank you for joining us again. Very exciting to be launching the second installment of the 3T Shiurim in preparation for Rosh Hashanah. I want to at this opportunity thank Alcon again for really putting this whole project together, this whole 3Ts, in terms of Tshuva, Tefillah, Tzedakah, all different community initiatives that are going on. And one of those is about this learning of Shiurim on all three topics. This week we're going to hear each night this week, beginning tonight through Wednesday night, half an hour, 40-minute shiurim from different guest speakers, and tonight starting with myself. So just maybe to begin, I want to share a story. On Shabbat, those of you who are in shul heard that I told a Hasidic story on Shabbat. So tonight I'm going to tell a story. It's not a Hasidic story, but it's a story about Hasidim. And the story is told of the Chafetz Chaim, that once he was traveling through. Some of you may have heard me tell the story before in a different context. But the Chofetz Chaim was, once he was traveling through a certain town, and it was Erev Rosh Chodesh. Erev Rosh Chodesh, certain people have some communities have the minhag to say a Tfilat Yom Kippur Katan. And the Chofetz Chaim came into a shtibl of Hasidim, they were davening Mincha, and he said to them, what about Yom Kippur Katan? And they said, we don't daven Yom Kippur Katan, which is this minhag that before every Rosh Chodesh is like a mini Yom Kippur. They say, this is not our custom because our Rebbe doesn't do it. The Rebbe doesn't have a Yom Kippur Katan, so we don't do it. So Chofetz Chaim said to them, I want to tell you a story. And the story is as follows. There were two Jews who got on a train in Warsaw, and one turned to the other. He said, where are you going? He said, I'm going to Krakow. He said, me too. So the train pulled out of the station, and at the first stop, still very far from Krakow, one of them got up to get off the train. And his friend turned to him, he said, what are you doing? Why are you getting off? We're still very far. I thought you said you were going to Krakow. He said, I am. He said, well, why are you getting off now? He said, I'm not like you. You're a very wealthy man. You buy a ticket that takes you all the way to Krakow. It's where you want to get. Me, I can't afford a ticket to get all the way there. I just have a few pennies to my name. I put them together. I go, I buy a ticket. The ticket takes me wherever it will take me. I'll get off at the first stop. I'll get a few pennies together. I'll get another ticket to the next stop. Eventually, I'll get there. And I'll see you in Krakow. And he gets off the train. Says the Chofetz Chaim, that's the story, that's the mashal, and this is the nimshal. He said to the Hasidim, your Rebbe is a very holy man. He is very wealthy spiritually. He can buy a ticket from one Yom Kippur to the next Yom Kippur. He doesn't need any stops along the way. The rest of you, the rest of us, we need different stops to get there. So we need Yom Kippur Katan. Whether they listen to him and David Yom Kippur Katan then or not, I'm not sure.
Don't touch me.
But anyway, then that's the story, that's the analogy, and the point for us, that on the way to Yom Kippur and on the way through the Yamim Noraim, we have different stops. We have different stops along the way and different stations that help us get there. Culminating in Yom Kippur, we'll get there soon. Before that, you know, we have Rosh Hashanah, we have the Aseret Yemei Tshuva, we have Shabbat Tshuva along the way, different stops to get us there. We've really started already with the beginning of Chodesh Elul. And last night, we came to another very, very important station, and that is where we began to say Slichot. And we have now the next 4 or 5 days of saying Slichot. This is really upping our preparation a little, taking it to the next stage, to the next level in preparation for the Yamim Noraim, for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. The question is, we have all these stops along the way. We're on the train, so to speak. We bought our ticket, but you know, you can buy a ticket and get on the wrong train. We need to know where we're going. We need to know what our destination is, what we are trying to achieve. What are these Yamim Noraim all about? And I think just when you say the name Yamim Noraim, you know, it fills a lot of people with fear. And in ordinary years, maybe for different reasons than for this year, you know, some people might think about, you know, all the meals they have to make and all the guests they have to invite and all the things that have to be done. This year, you know, that's going to be a little bit different. But in terms of the Yamim Noraim, we think about judgment, you know, we think about fear. We think about even that name, the words Yamim Noraim, which we translate very elegantly as days of awe. Now, literally, the word Nora in Hebrew means terrible. Yamim Noraim means terrible days. You know, for a lot of people, these are terrible days. A lot of people just want to see the time pass and just want to, you know, just want to get through the end of it. Rosh Hashanah, it's almost like Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur is something we just have to get through. You know, we'll get to Sukkot and Shemini Atzeret on the other side. We're waiting for that. We just kind of want to get through and want this time to pass. Just on that point, I just want to share with you a very, very quick video. I'll talk through while we watch it. Mel, I apologize. It's not Yishai Reba this time. But this is a video which I saw recently. And you can see on screen, it's a little bit strange, but if you can see the video, you'll see There's something called Standard Time. And what it is, it's a huge sculpture which was made in Germany. You can see all these workers putting together these beams of a wooden clock. And it's a wooden clock which changes every minute. The way that it changes every minute, that once the beams are there, they're in place. And the workers come along and they move it each minute to change the time. You can actually download this as an app on your phone if you get bored. So you can this can be the clock on your iPhone or Android, whatever it is. You can watch. And you can watch through, yeah, they're changing the time. I think they're putting on a number 3 there or a 2, whatever the time is. For 24 hours, these workers came and they, I don't know if it was the same people for 24 hours, they took shifts, but they came and they changed the clock and moved the beams each minute to change the time, to update the time. And they're constantly almost falling behind, almost missing, because if it takes them longer than a minute to change the beams, you know, they've missed the time. But this is what they're doing. And you can watch this and you can see for 24 hours, these people are literally, all they are doing is changing the time, is watching the time pass for the sake that the time can go on. And it's a little bit bizarre, but when I saw this and I watched it, you know, it got me thinking, maybe this is, you know, sometimes this is what we do. This is, you know, especially we come to this period of year, and again, this is not a criticism, but, you know, thinking about the lockdown and different things, and, you know, many people kind of just waiting, you know, when will it end? But in that time, you know, what are we doing? Are we just looking at the time? Are we just watching it pass? Sometimes we get to Yamim Ra'im and we just want the time to pass. But really, we can actually fill it with content. We can fill it with a lot of, we're meant to fill it with content and, you know, get on that train, get that ticket and get to the destination. So I'm going to now share the source sheet with you. Bring back this idea, you know, again, asking this question of what is the destination? What is the nature of these days and what are we meant to, experience through them? And I think this is, I said, there's a lot of misunderstanding. There's a lot of confusion. And it's not new. It's confusion that goes back many, many centuries. Like the first source here on the sheet is from Sefer Nehemiah, the book of Ezra and Nehemiah in the Tanakh. And it describes a very, very moving passage where Bnei Israel, after they came back from exile in the Second Temple period, they came back to Israel. And there was this ma'amad, there was this occasion where they were being read the Sefer Torah. They'd been in exile. They'd lost. They didn't know. All of these commands sounded very, very strange to them. They hadn't heard of them. And Ezra Kohen, Ezra the priest, is standing and he's reading the Torah to the people. And they begin to cry. They begin to cry and they begin to mourn. Why? Because they are hearing all these commands. They're hearing this Torah, which was so strange, which they didn't even know what it was about. And this took place on the day of Rosh Hashanah. This is the day when this happened. And the Sukkim say, we've got them here in Hebrew, with the English translation underneath. Says Vayomer Nehemiah Shata Ezra Kohen Asofer Valeviim Hamevinim Et Ha'am L'Chol Ha'am Hayom Kadosh Hashem Elokeichem. So Ezra and Nehemiah turn to the people and say, today is holy. Again, this is on the day of Rosh Hashanah. Al titablu v'al tivku. Don't mourn, don't cry. Ki bochim kol ha'am k'shomam et divrei Torah. As I said, the people were crying when they heard these words of Torah, which were so foreign to them. And Ezra Nehemiah told them, don't cry. Rather, today's Rosh Hashanah. Go and eat choice foods, or shtumam takim, and go and drink sweet drinks. And send portions of food to those who don't have. And then the words in bold, don't be sad. Your rejoicing in the Lord is the source of your strength. And that's what happened. All the people went home and they were very, very happy. And this was the question about, you know, Rosh Hashanah. We see already, going back in the times of the Tanakh, is this meant to be a happy day? Is this meant to be a sad day? Already here there's a machloket. And the truth is that for the, maybe not necessarily a sad day, but going back to, you know, what we said, days of awe, days of fear, days of trepidation, the whole world's being judged. It's going to be decided if we're going to live, if we're going to die, if there's going to be a pandemic in the coming year. You know, how can we not be scared? And I want to show there are a number of sources that really seem to back up this. And before we go back to see what Ezra and Nehemiah were thinking. But first, let's look at a number of sources that show, give a lot of weight to this idea that really, yes, these are Yamim Noraim. It's not so simple. First of all, the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, source number 2. Amar Rabbi Abao. Says Rabbi Abao, Amru Malachi Asharet Lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono Shel Olam Mipnei Ma'ein Yisrael Umim Shira Lefanecha Bo Shnav Yom Kippurim. Every festival that we have, every Yom Tov, we say Shira, we sing songs of praise, we say Hallel. The Malachim, the ministering angels are sitting before HaKadosh Baruch Hu and they ask, why is it Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, these are Yamim Tovim, why is it that the Bnei Yisrael are not singing songs of praise. Why are they not saying Hallel? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, no less, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself comes along and answers, tells us in the Gemara, Marlem, if Shem Melech Yoshev al Kisei Din, can it be that a king is sitting on the throne of judgment? V'sifrei Chayim v'sifrei Metim p'tuchim lefanav. The books of life and the books of death are open before him. In such a context, is it possible, v'Yisrael umum shira? Is that the appropriate time to be singing songs of praise? Is that the appropriate time to be singing Hallel? And, you know, we know we don't say Hallel on Rosh Hashanah for this very, very reason. There is a sense it's not like the other Yamim Tovim, that it's just a day of Simcha. It is a day of awe. It is a day of trepidation. And taking this idea one step further, an amazing, Eliezer points out, if you look at our tefillot in the Machzor, again, this year they're going to be shortened a little bit. We're not saying all the things that we normally say. But this, but we will, when we blow the shofar, we spoke last week about how many notes we have to blow. We have the tkiyot miyushav and the tkiyot miyomad. We have a set of tkiyot before musaf. Then we then have another set of tkiyot, which according to most rishonim are the main tkiyot of the day during musaf, during the repetition of the Amidah. And we have those three special brachot, which we say on Rosh Hashanah. These are brachot in the musaf Amidah. We don't have them any other time of year. But three brachot of malchuyot, of zichronot, and of shofrot. And of kingship, of remembrances, and of shofarot of different times in history where the shofar has been blown. And each of those, in the Amidah of Musaf, we say a 10 psukim relating to each of those. And there are some communities where they would blow the shofar even during the private Amidah. Our custom is only in the repetition, but in the repetition, at the end of each of those brachot, so we have another set of shofar blasts. And when we have each of those sets, then there are two small tefillot which we say afterwards. We say Hayom Harat Olam, which means, you know, this is the day, this is the birth of the world. Actually, when we say it's the birth of the world, we mean it's the birth of mankind. The birth of the world, the day the world was created, was actually 6 days earlier on Kaf Hei Elo, which I think is tonight. But we say Hayom Harat Olam. And then we have another tefillah we say, which is Areshet Tzvatein. Areshet Tzvatein Yirav Lefanecha. And that second tefillah, that is a sort of, that goes together with the shofar. Essentially what we're saying is, may our, just reading here from the Koran translation, may our mouth's words rise beautiful before you, most high and elevated God who understands and heeds, looks on and listens to the sounds of our shofar blasts. And we change the ending over there for whether it was Malchiot, Zichronot, or Shofrot, with whichever one it went with. And that paragraph we only say when we blow the shofar. So on Shabbat, when, like this year, the first Erev Shana will be Shabbat, we won't blow the shofar, we won't say that paragraph, Areshet Sfateinu. The paragraph before, which is Hayom Harat Olam, we will say. That's not necessarily to do with the shofar. So the Tzitz Eliezer, who was one of the most prominent poskim of this generation, he has actually in his shut over 20 volumes of shut of response. He has a whole section, which are the drashot which he gave on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur for his keilah. It's fascinating to go through and to read and see, you know, the Tzitz Eliezer, one of the Gdolei Ador, exactly when he stood up in front of his kila, what was the drasha that he gave on Rosh Hashanah? And he asks this question. He says, we blow the shofar and we then have two short tefillot. The first one we say, Hayom Harat Olam, which we say even on Shabbos, has got nothing to do with the shofar that we just blew. The second one, which is Areshet Sfateinu, which is essentially a prayer that's accompanying the shofar blast, we don't say it on Shabbos because there's no point saying it when we don't blow the shofar. So he says, which would make sense to come first? Obviously, it would make sense if we blow the shofar and then we have a prayer, a supplication that our shofar blast should be accepted, we should say that immediately after the shofar. And then we can say whatever else we want to add in. But that's not what we do. We switch the order around. Right? Again, we blow the shofar and then we say Hayom Harat Olam. We say a general statement about the fact that today is Rosh Hashanah. And then after that, we say, we forgot. The shofar that we just blew, please can that be accepted? So Tzitz Eliezer says over here an amazing insight. Why is it that we switch that order around? He says as follows. Now reading inside, I apologize, I don't have a translation for this one, but I'll read through the Hebrew and I'll translate as we go. So he says, Mishum kach anu makdimim achrei atkiyot lomar haketa shel hayom harat olam lifnei haketa shel areshet tzvatenu. He's explaining why the first paragraph, Hayom Harat Olam, is actually the first, and the second is the second. He says, "Mivnei shematkonet atkiot ha'masodarot b'malchiyot zichronot shofrot k'fi shagmar meret And this is where the Gemara gives the explanation why we have these three brachot. It says malchuyot, kingship, kadesh tamlichuni alechem, that we should anoint, we should appoint Hashem as our king over us. Zichronot, remembrances, kadesh yaleh zichronechem lefanei letova, in order that our remembrances should rise before him. Ubameh b'shofar, how do we do this? We accompany it with the shofar. So says the Tzitz Eliezer, nishelet im ken efu ha-sheila, we can ask the following question. Im kacha she'anu mamlechim otoit b'alf shmo al yadei kach lemelech aleinu, if, and this is essentially what we're doing on Rosh Hashanah, this is why we blow the shofar, this is the point of everything. We are appointing Hashem as our king. So he says, Lama lo omrim lefanav halel v'shira v'zimra. When you appoint a king, when you coronate a king, it is a very joyous occasion. You blow the trumpets, we blow the shofar, we blow the trumpets. We should sing songs of praise for the king. And he says, therefore, because we don't, we have to apologize. He says, yes, you coronated the king, it should be a happy thing. We should sing songs of praise. But rather, he says, okay, makdimim v'omrim, we say like as follows. Ki lachen anu lo mamshichim b'amirat halel, mipnei shayom harat olam, hayom yamid b'mishpat kol Yisrael amim. We add in that first paragraph, it says, hayom harat olam, today is the day the world was created, the man was created, today is the day that we are all sitting in judgment. That is an apology, that's an explanation of why following the shofar, following the coronation, the trumpet, as it were, we don't carry on with songs of praise. Because today is the day of judgment. We are fearful. We are engrossed within ourselves, thinking about tshuva, etc. Bevakashat kabbalah slicha, asking for forgiveness. And in such an awesome, such a terrible situation, since it's also a day of judgment, yes, it's coronation of the king, but it's also a day of judgment, and therefore we cannot sing songs of praise. So he says this paragraph of Ayom Arat Olam is almost an apology. It's almost an apology that we aren't more joyous on this day. Then we can carry on with the following paragraph. He says, well, here it's built into our tefillot, that yeah, there has to be a sense of awe, there has to be a sense of trepidation on this day. And then just following along with a few sources from the Shulchan Aruch, also expressing the same idea that Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, I started off saying that this is a misconception and that everybody thinks these are days of fear, but there actually might be something else. First, I just want to explain where this comes from. There is what to say, why it is days of fear, and afterwards we'll see the other side. But so the Shulchan Aruch tells us that on Erev Rosh Hashanah, the day before Erev Chag, we go, we wash our clothes, we have haircuts and shave, etc. The Mishnah Brura, commenting on that piece in the Shulchan Aruch, he says, "Mikom akom lo yelbash poshna bigdei l'kmav v'meshi ki b'sha yom tov." He says, "Yes, it's true. On Rosh Hashanah, we wear fine clothes. We don't necessarily wear our finest clothes." Again, exactly what they would wear, you know, over 100 years ago. I'm not sure exactly what the fashion was then, but he's talking about some sort of silk and, you know, special clothes, which they would wear on Yom Tov. Is we wouldn't wear those on Rosh Hashanah. Dihei morah hadin, because there is a certain fear of judgment, so we tone it down a little bit. Again, in source number 5, Shulchan Aruch says another piece referring to our prayers. Eino omer moadim l'simcha chagim uzmanim l'sason. In every other Yom Tov, we know that we have a command of Samachta b'chagecha. Yom Tov, we always say, you know, Chag Sameach, or even in the Tefillah, Muadim l'Simcha. Discussion in the Rishonim: do we say those words in our Tefillah on Rosh Hashanah? Says the Shulchan Aruch, no, we don't. So the question, right? What exactly is the way? You know, how do you greet people on Rosh Hashanah? So it's easy because you say Shana Tova, but you know, do you say Chag Sameach, not Chag Sameach? They say Rav Kook used to wish people Chag Mevorach. It should be a blessed Chag. He didn't feel that saying Chag Sameach was appropriate. And then in source number 6, over here, the Shulchan Aruch actually tells us, Ochlim v'shotim usmechem. Yes, we eat, like we saw in the Pesukim in Nehemiah. Yes, we eat and we drink and we rejoice. We have a meal on Hashanah. However, he says, Omnam lo yachlu kol sveya. You shouldn't eat, you know, as much as you might on an ordinary Shabbat, as much as you might on another Yom Tov. Don't eat your full completely. Or that you should still have fear of heaven. And then finally, source number 7, before we flip it all around, is the Rambam in Hilchot Megillah and Chanukah, where the Rambam lists the days on which we say Hallel. We saw before the Gemara talking about different days of Yom Tov. We say Halal, sit on Rosh Hashanah, we don't say Halal. The Rambam explains why. He says, "Of our Rosh Hashanah v'Yom Kippurim, en bahen Halal, lefi shehen yemei tshuva v'yirah v'pachad v'lo yemei simcha itala." These are not days of extraordinary happiness. Rather, these are days of tshuva and of fear and of dread. Okay, so having said all of that, I've left myself with quite a lot of work to do to try and show that this isn't actually the only way of looking at Rosh Hashanah. Based on all these sources, you know, we go back to the Pesukim that we started off with in Nehemiah, where he says, don't cry. The truth is there are certain places where it's brought in halacha, according to the Vilna Gaon, that a person shouldn't cry on Rosh Hashanah. That if a person is davening and he arouses himself to cry while he's davening, that maybe is not correct. And that's what Nehemiah says to people. He says, don't be sad. This is a joyous day. Chedvat Hashem imauschem. So where does this come from? And how do we reconcile this with everything which we've seen until now? So we have a look at the Torah in source number 8. And the Torah over here, the Torah was, I guess in many ways, sort of the precursor to the Shulchan Aruch. He brings out a fascinating Midrash. And the Midrash says, Amar Rabbi Simon, Tiv ki mi goy gadol v'gomer. It's talking about, there's a pasuk, who is like this great nation, referring to Am Yisrael, what's so great about this nation. He says, Rabbi Chanina v'Rabbi Yoshua amuin, Ezo uma kuma zo chodat ofiya shel Eloah. This nation, the nation of Israel, is so great, they know the nature of their God. What does that mean? He says, Minago shel olam, Adam shesh lo din lovesh shchorim, umitatev shchorim, magadel zkano, ve'en chotech tziponav, levi she'eno yada ech yetzei dino. He says, ordinarily, the way of the world is that a person is going in for a judgment. A person is going in for a judgment before the king. What does he do? As he wears black clothes, he lets his beard grow, he doesn't cut his hair, he doesn't cut his nails. He's acts like he's in mourning because he doesn't know how his case is going to be judged. Continues the Midrash. However, that's not what we do. Aval Yisrael enan ken. Lovshim levanim, we wear white, we wear fine clothes. Mitatfim levanim, megalchim zkanam, umachatchin ziponehem. We do exactly the opposite. Shave, cut their nails. Ve'uchlin v'shotin u'smechin b'Rosh Hashanah. We eat and drink and rejoice on Rosh Hashanah. You'll notice those were the exact words from the Midrash, from the Torah, which are copied in the Shulchan Aruch. We'll come back to it again soon. But yes, we eat and drink and we're happy on Rosh Hashanah. Lefi she'odin shakadosh baruch hu yaseh lahem nes. Because they know that God will do a miracle for them, will judge them favorably. Certainly, maybe on an individual level, we don't all know how it's going to end up. We know that ultimately, and certainly on a national level, that's what's going to be. So from here, we see we're in the opposite of what we saw before. Telling us that even though it's a day of judgment, yes, it's a day to eat and drink. It's a day to be happy. It's a day to celebrate. Another interesting midrash that goes along similar sort of lines is what Avihan source number 9. Don't have a translation for this one. But essentially, this midrash is talking about Sukkot. It's talking about why we have a lulav on the first day of Sukkot. And it tells us that Rosh Hashanah, this is from the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah. We've mentioned a number of times that every individual passes before, like sheep passing before a shepherd. Each and every individual, and of course here is not referring just to the Jewish people, but it's referring to all of mankind. All of mankind is judged on Rosh Hashanah. And that includes us, the Jewish people. So it says Israel, the nations of the world say, we were victorious in the judgment. Bnei Israel say, we were victorious, and nobody knows who won. Ein adam yodei mi nitzach. Im Yisraelim umot ha'olam. Was it the Jewish people, or was it their enemies? Aval Rosh Hashanah, Rosh Hashanah passes, v'kol Yisrael ba'im b'yom kippur u'mitanim. And then comes Yom Kippur, we all fast, mitatfin levanim, aval Yom Kippur, v'ein adam yodei lemi nimchul avonotav. Yom Kippur passes as well. We don't know what the outcome was. We don't know who had their sins forgiven. Im Yisraelim l'ofdei elilim. Was it for the Jewish people? Was it for others? Once the first day of Sukkot comes along, everybody comes out with their lulav in their hands, almost like the sword of victory. And that is a sign everybody knows that Bnei Israel were victorious and that their sins were forgiven. So again, you get the tone here from this midrash as well, very sort of optimistic, very sort of celebratory in nature. And bring it down just a few places in Halakha. Before I know, I brought three sources in the Shulchan Aruch, showing us it's not a day to be happy, but we have a number of sources that show us that actually it is. The Rama over here says This is the where he's talking about simanim. We know we have different simanim. We talk about he mentions an apple, which is the tinhani. The Rama also mentions the minhag to eat pomegranates. And then the book, which is involved, he says also nogin echol basal shemen, eat fatty meat, bekomen emetika, and all sorts of sweet foods. Right, we eat the best foods because we're happy, we're celebrating. And the truth is that if we go back to the sources that we saw before, the sources which are brought to show that it's not completely a day of simcha, nonetheless, there is actually an element of simcha in it. Look at source number four, the Shulchan Aruch. He says, "Mechapsinu mistaplim be'erev Rosh Hashanah." Yes, we wash our clothes, we get haircuts on Erev Rosh Hashanah. We do treat it as a Yom Tov. Source number five, we can't really swing it the other way. But source number six as well, I brought before to show that we don't eat our fill completely. But nonetheless, Shulchan Aruch does say, "Ochlim v'shotim v'smechim." We eat, we drink, and we are happy. We're happy on Rosh Hashanah. V'ein mitanin b'Rosh Hashanah. And also that you're not allowed to fast on Rosh Hashanah. There were some opinions that said you could. Shulchan Aruch says, no, you can't, because you have to have Simchat Yom Tov. And even the Rambam, who tells us that we don't say Halal on Rosh Hashanah, when he explains it and he says, because it's Yomei Tshuva V'Yirah B'Pachad, if you look closely, the Rambam doesn't say these are not happy days. He says, Lo Yomei Simcha Yeterah. These are not days of excessive happiness, but nonetheless, they are days of happiness, is a Yom Tov as well. So how do we tie it all together? So I want to tie it all together now with another piece from the Rambam. This is the Rambam in his Mishneh Torah, what we just quoted. But the Rambam in the Perush HaMishnayot, when he, in his commentary to the Mishnah, which was originally written in Arabic, which is why the Hebrew that we have comes from a translation, so there are different versions of the translation. But when he explains in his commentary to the Mishnah why it is that we don't say Halal on Rosh Hashanah, so the Rambam says something amazing. He says, "Avi alefi she'en kolin halel lo b'Rosh Hashanah v'lo b'yom ha'kippurim, lefi she'em yomei tefila v'achna'a lifnei Hashem v'yirah mimenu." He says, we don't say Halal on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur because these are days of prayer, these are days of davening, these are days of subjugation before Hashem and fear from Him. And then, the next two words, says the Rambam, these are days of carrying on, these are days of fear, umivrach, days of running away, of fleeing, right? And we might have expected, I know you can see the next words in the commentary, but if we were writing it, we might have expected him to say, these are days of fear from him and running away what from him? Running away from the judgment. And Hashem is the one who is judging us. That's what we want to get out of the courtroom, we want to run away from the judge. Rambam says, yeah, something incredible. He says, these are days of fear, of running away, mivrach umanos, running away, elav, running towards him. He doesn't say these are days where we run away from Hashem. He says these are days exactly when we run towards Him. And then he says, "Utshuva tchina bakashat mechila ve'en ra'oy b'matzavim kein l'smach ve'lasis." Not fitting in such circumstances to rejoice too much. But there's a dichotomy over here, which is, you know, in one word, which he's teaching us, which he's saying essentially, you know, if we think of the idea, why we said at the beginning, these are days of yamim nora'im, these are days of judgment, days of awe, days of fear, days of dread, all these things. You know, you imagine a person's about to walk into the courtroom and he's fearful for his life and he doesn't know what's going to happen. And the one thing that might make a person feel better in such a situation when he's walking in, it's, you know, imagine on a human court, you know, probably the thing that's on top of his mind more than anything else is, you know, he hopes that he gets a good judge. He hopes that he gets the right judge who's going to be favorable for him. And he walks to the courtroom and everybody walks inside and the judge comes in and he stands up and he looks up and the judge is his father. And he thinks, okay, he's in good hands, right? He still has to go through the judgment. He still has to go through and has to give, you know, whatever it is. But if there's anybody who's going to be, sympathetic to his case, if there's anybody who's going to do whatever he can to try and give him a favorable outcome, you know, who could it be more than his father? And that's why in the Tefillah of Rosh Hashanah, in Yom Kippur, all the time we say, Avinu Malkeinu, that's a refrain that we say, Avinu Malkeinu again and again and again, already now in Slichot, we say it as well. And we focus very much in this time on this theme of kingship, Malkeinu, but there's also this theme of Avinu, of our father. And this is the idea, what the Rambam is trying to say. On the one hand, there is a fear. Because we're going to be judged, because we don't know, you know, what's going to be. But then we realize that not only is this a day of awe, but this is a day of opportunity. This is a day of, you know, coming into close relationship with the one who's ultimately going to decide everything that's going to be. And it's an opportunity for us to really rebuild that relationship and come close to him. And I want to share this piece over here from Chiddushei HaGriz, the Brisker Rav, and Yitzhak Zev Soloveitchik. He takes the idea of the Rambam, and he takes it one step further. He says, Mavoal Kan Shemen, he quotes exactly this piece from the Rambam's commentary, which we just saw. And he says, Mavar Kancha Yamima Elo Yamime Pachad Mol Umola. These are days of fear. Vamola Ugadol Ad Kadei Bricha. So we get so scared that we want to run away. Akadei Bricha Shemachmat Godel Amola Tzalch Livoach. So fearful, we have to run away. And so where do you run to? The person gets very fearful. They run to whoever can shelter them. Vain Makum Livoach Kiim Lemanoselav. And the one who we started off, we thought we were running away from him, actually, that's where we run towards. That's who can save us. We have one of the piyotim, which we don't say, even when we aren't skipping piyotim, but this is in the Sfardi Machzorim. In one place, it was written by Shlomo Ibn Gabiro. He has these two words. He says, "Ya evlach mimcha elecha." Says the person, this is exactly the dichotomy of what we should be feeling on these days. The person says, "I'm running away." He turns to Hashem and says, "I'm running away from you towards you." This is what it means. It's Brisker Rav. Nilei dehine dat be'et she'adam nimtza betzala, tzalich she'ye lo bitachon she'azor Hashem. When a person is in a distressing situation, he's in trouble, he needs to have bitachon, then Hashem will help him. Umnam im lo yadav yakir ratzala she'nimtza bo, v'lachen en lo pachad, v'yesh lo bitachon, avadai lo nekla bitachon. He says, what happens if a person, you might think a person has so much bitachon, he has so much faith, that he doesn't get scared in the first place. Because that's not bitachon. Because if a person is in trouble and he doesn't get scared, maybe he just doesn't realize what situation he's in. Maybe he just doesn't realize what to be afraid of. That's not bitachon. Bitachon, he says, he doesn't have any fear. That's not what bitachon is at all. Bitachon is when you have that fear, but that leads you to understand where you have to go to, and that's your bitachon. He says, nimtza lefi zeh. As much as a person, maybe counterintuitive, but as much as a person realizes how distressing a situation could be, as much trouble as a person realizes that he's in coming into Rosh Hashanah, because it's going to be decided everything, whether he's going to be here next year. The fear is so great that a person feels there's nothing he can do. He just feels he has to run away. When he internalizes just how great the fear is, then he can reach the greatest level of bitachon, which is realizing what the situation is, realizing how much help he needs, but then he can run, and then he can run towards Hashem. And therefore you can only run towards, you can only gain shelter in him after you know that you have to run away. And that essentially, I think, is the great resolution of all these different sources that we've seen. On the one hand, days of fear, yes, but it's that fear, it's that understanding of the situation of, how much is at stake and how much is on the line, that awe that gives way to the opportunity. It's that understanding, realizing what that dependence is. And once we have that opportunity, we know who the one that we really should be dependent on. And then it's up to us, to do all that he expects us to do. And we go through the 10 days of tshuva. Step by step, bit by bit, but trying to do a little bit more all the time. I think, just to conclude, this year more than ever, we can really get a sense of this. Before the show, I was looking through something that I wrote, a sikha that I gave last year in Rosh Hashanah. I was talking about this exact idea of this fear, in earlier generations, as much as I was building up, the fear at the beginning, don't feel it the same way that once upon a time they used to feel it. There's all, the famous stories of the Rosh Shiva who gets up on the first day of Elul and everybody's waiting for the Shechan. All he says is, Elul. And that's enough for everybody to be trembling in their boots. They used to say that the fish in the sea would quake, or the fish in the sea would shake when it was Elul. Rabbi Yisrael Salanta, already Shabbos Mevarchim before, he would just hear the name Elul and they say he would faint. But people used to get very, very scared. And part of that is, just a year ago, I said to some people, part of that is that in earlier generations, there was a much greater sense of our dependence. Nowadays, we don't feel so much, so often that, everything's really at stake. Everything, we come to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, you know, Allah's on the line, you know, the fate of the world's hanging in the balance. Like, okay, but we've got science, we've got medicine, we've got technology. You know, it's not like it once was. That's what we were all thinking, you know, just 12 months ago. And look at us now. So I think, again, you know, we have this, not to say we are in, there are tremendous challenges that people have gone through and tremendous challenges people will still go through, and not to downplay any of that at all. But we have gained an increased sense of our independence, an increased sense of, you know, maybe how vulnerable we all are in the world. And that, in an ironic sort of way, really gives way to this tremendous opportunity of the days ahead. So we should all take advantage of the opportunity. Wishing everybody a ktivah v'chatima tova, a happy, healthy, sweet new year. And please join us the rest of the week.